Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Australia bans Chris Brown. A wrecking ball is sent over to Honey Boo Boo's old house. The Obamas are ready to put the White House behind them. And my guest co-host, Guy David, visits the set of Shark Tank, telling all now. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting here with host Guy David and a friend of mine through AfterBuzz TV. Guy, welcome to Grant's Rants.
I'm excited to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, of course. My pleasure. We've got a lot of people here on the panel who are not native to L.A., and just by listening to your voice, the listeners know that you're not an Angelino.
I'm clearly not native to L.A., as you can tell.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, including myself, have said, oh, you know, it's so much work to move across the country. You know, you really have to be super ambitious. Well, yeah. You moved across the globe.
Yeah, I don't feel sympathy at all for those people that say they're homesick because they live a two-hour flight away or anything.
Yeah.
Try living a 16-hour flight away in, like, a different hemisphere.
Yeah.
When the time zones, there's an 18-hour difference in time between Australia and L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, say it's the next day in Australia.
Yeah.
So you only have, like, limited time during the day to speak with your family, speak with friends back home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long way, but I've always been independent.
Yeah.
And it's tough because I spent my first 18 years in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've spent my next 10 years in America. So my whole adult life has been in America.
Yeah.
So like my girlfriend, my American friends, my adult life is America, but my family, my old original friends is Australia. So
mm-hmm.
I'm torn in some aspects,
yeah.
But I'm settled down here now. I love it.
Right, yeah. When it comes to the time difference, like whenever I look at the clock, I see it's 1, I know it's 4 Eastern. When it's 5, I know it's 8. Do you have that trigger when it comes to the 18-hour plus?
Yeah, you got to add 12 hours plus 6. But the trippiest thing about it is taking the flight. So say I go to Australia, I leave Tuesday. The planes always leave at night, like 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I arrive Thursday morning, so Wednesday didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So Wednesday never existed. Then coming back, say I leave Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. I get to L.A. and it's Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. So I've flown 15 hours and I've gone back in time. I'm like, I've already seen this. I can tell you what happened. I've already seen this.
That's so weird. And I would hate the fact just going there that you lose a day. I hate wasting time. And it's not a waste if you obviously going to go see family, but it's like I hate losing time like that. That would drive me crazy.
Yeah,
I get angry losing 4 hours.
Yeah, going there, I lose a whole day. Like the day doesn't exist. So like I leave on a Thursday night, Friday never exists for me.
Wow.
But I gain it back going back.
Yeah.
So that's why jet lag happens, man. It trips you out.
Yeah.
You land, you're ready to eat dinner. You're like, I want like a burger and fries.
Mm.
But everyone's eating eggs and oatmeal.
Yeah.
So
do you ever become used to the jet lag? Does it ever kind of just, is it always extreme?
It's brutal. Going to Australia is not bad. The key is to stay awake the whole day. If you don't stay awake, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
But going from Australia to America, you're done because you land at like 7 a.m. in the morning, American time, which is really 1 a.m. Australian time. So the time you're going to bed, you're waking up. So you've been awake the whole flight because you're on Australian time. And then when you're ready to crash, like 1 a.m. in Australia, you're landing at 7 a.m. And you have to stay awake that whole day,
well,
which you can't do.
Yeah, it couldn't be worse.
And if you do sleep, you're done. What happens is you wake up at 2 a.m. for about 3 or 4 days straight, and you're wide awake. I mean, completely wide awake, and you can't do anything. And you stay awake to 7, and then you sleep again. It becomes a vicious cycle. So you've literally got to go out of your comfort zone and suffer some horrible fatigue to beat jet lag.
Wow.
So I've tried everything. Nothing works. I've tried looking at the sun. I've tried taking pills. I've tried... It's all rubbish.
Yeah.
You're screwed either way.
Yeah, no, it sounds like worst case scenario.
But I do it often, and I love Australia. I love America. So if you're going there, just make sure you do a two-week trip at least.
At least.
It's expensive. It takes a while to acclimatize, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you need that time.
Yeah. Well, while we're speaking about Australia, let's talk about some hot topics related to your homeland.
Yes.
Chris Brown, he has been rejected from performing over there. It doesn't look good for him. This kid's got more problems than anybody else. He's up there with Lindsay. I think if someone did a little checkbox between them, they have equal problems, pretty much.
It's a good comparison.
Yeah. So the immigration of, board or whoever, the prime minister over there barred him from performing. He had to send some type of form claiming why he had to go there. And they're saying, no, we don't want you because of the 09 beating of Rihanna. And they're kind of holding him to that.
Yeah.
Do you think that too much time has passed and that, you know, this is kind of ridiculous, they're still holding this over his head? Or are they making an example out of him?
Well, me personally, I'd let him in. I mean, he's a performer. He's going to entertain thousands of people. I mean, you don't think he's going to get in trouble. You never know. If he is, just don't let him in again. But this isn't the first time this has happened. This happened with Snoop Dogg as well. And it brings up the interesting topic, are celebrities above the law? You know, they're not above the law. And our law is, if you have a criminal conviction, you cannot enter the country, no matter who you are. It applies to people every day, but we just don't hear those people because Chris Brown's obviously an entertainer.
Right.
So do they make an exception because of his status, who he is, how he's going to entertain people? Or do they have to, you know, set a line that the law is the law, nobody is above the law? And in this case, that's what they've said. They've said he's got a criminal conviction. He cannot be approved a visa into Australia, no matter who he is.
Well, I like that. I think that's actually fine. That's their standard. And, you know, I don't think there should be an exception made for him, in my opinion. I don't really care for him either way. I mean, maybe if he was one of my favorites, I'd be more Team Chris, but I don't know.
And this guy,
it's not, whatever, forget it.
He just keeps getting in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard he's been diagnosed with bipolar lately, which probably makes it, so explains a little bit, but he just can't stay out of trouble. So I don't think there's anything to justify him being able to come in the country.
Right.
I mean, firstly, you're not above the law, but secondly, if they did sit down and make an agreement and, like, he sold so many tickets, he's bringing money to the economy, he's been good for 4 years, clean rap sheet, something, maybe, but he just, he hasn't stayed out of trouble, you know, so.
The thing with him is, I mean, he's allegedly, like, gang affiliated. He's had more, probably he has to move his house, move to a different house a couple times because of people breaking in, because of people he's associated himself with. So, I mean, there's different arguments to be made. But at the same time, if this is preventing him from doing business or, you know, fulfilling his obligations with work, then that could be a problem because that could affect livelihood, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as me. I'm a green card holder here. I'm not a citizen. If I get any sort of criminal conviction, I'm deported. I'm out of the country. I'm not allowed back in. So the same sort of applies to him, but he's a household name. And he's just one of those guys that when he first came on the scene, I think he was like 18, like back in 2005, 2000.
Yeah. He's my age. He's 26. Yeah.
He was so talented. I used to watch this guy and go, man, this guy's moves, his voice, he's so talented. And then the Rihanna thing happened, and it was just a downward spiral.
Yeah,
and I loved the guy, and I've just lost respect for him now. I'm just like, I mean, things happen, accidents happen. You can get over it, but it just continues to get in trouble. So, Australia have put their foot down, and Australia has been proven to be a tough country in the past with our immigration policy, our refugee policy. We're a huge, underpopulated, rich island in the middle of overpopulated, poor third world Asia. So we get immigrants coming all the time, all the time. And we've proved to be a tough country to crack.
Yeah.
I mean, we let these people die on the ship before letting them in.
Oh, wow.
So that's not a good look. But
it's the opposite of over here where anybody can walk over.
No. You're not getting on our island.
Yeah. Wow.
So
what a difference.
It's interesting. This also happened to the other artist too. He's not the first one. But I don't know. I mean, if I'm a big Chris Brown fan, I had tickets, I guess I'd be upset. But why do you organize the concerts before getting this approved?
Right.
That's what I didn't understand about the whole thing.
Yeah, there has to be so many people involved to set such a thing up. You'd think that it would just, you know, like if you're going to hire people to arrange this concert, then it's happening. You're going to sell tickets. Who knows? Another problem to add to his sheet.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's not the only one with problems. J-Lo has had the sex tape looming for a long time. I mean, 1997, this tape was made. It's supposed to be 11 hours of unseen footage. It's being branded as a sex tape, but nobody really knows if she's really having sex on the tape. It's supposed to be her kind of in sexual positions, and she's, you know, smacking someone on the ass. Like, is it real? I mean, it's not like she's full Kim K.
No. I mean, it's a, what? It's a homemade movie for her previous husband, right? When she was young.
Yeah, the first husband, Alani Noah.
I mean, and yeah, and she's not a house... Is she a household name then? Not quite.
Oh, he or she?
She.
Oh, she is.
Back in 97? Yeah, she's still well-known.
Yeah, because she was doing that Selena movie. She was pretty big back then. She was on her way up.
You just got to be so careful. I mean, you're in the spotlight... You have falling outs with people, you have divorces, you know.
Would this make her one of the original ones, though, to have a sex tape? Because this is pre-Paris and pre-Kim and all the other...
Yeah, I guess it would, right?
Ladies. I'm going to use the term ladies to follow.
And I can't believe the amount of, like, celebrities, women that have been just... Even had their photos hacked, had these sex tapes. Don't they learn? Like Blake Lively, Scarlett Johansson, what's her name? The actress.
Too many to count.
Too many going on. And it just puts unnecessary... I mean, poor J-Lo is probably going through hell right now hoping this doesn't get out. Because if it gets out, you know everyone in the world's watching it. This is J-Lo. I mean, I'll be the first one to watch it.
Yeah, you'd watch it,
Of course I would. I'm not going to... and it just... She'll be looked upon differently. Even though this was her husband, there's nothing wrong with it. Everyone does this type of stuff, but...
Right.
It's not for the world to see. Mm-hmm. So what's the latest with it?
Well, she had him sign a confidentiality agreement in 1998 when they got a divorce. And so she thought it was all said and done. Now, currently, him and his legal team have found a loophole in the agreement. So now they're saying they can release this tape and they want to have a screening of it. And then they're going to, of course, sell and distribute it to whoever wants to get it. And, you know, it's not a lot of major outlets have picked this up, but it's resurfacing. Maybe it's resurfaced so many times at this point it's just not worth reporting on. But it looks like, you know, it could be possibly a threat to her. Is this going to damage her career? Would it damage her brand? Probably not.
I don't think so.
At this point...
I mean, it seems to benefit people in a way, but... I don't think it'd do anything for it, but you just, everyone would watch it though. But what's her like, what's her ex-husband doing? Is he struggling for work or publicity or?
He sounds like he's just desperate to make any dollar he can off of it.
Looks like he's gone to the lawyer and said, we need to find a loophole, I need to release this. Otherwise you wouldn't really care, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been since 1997.
This is nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
find something else to do. Go volunteer somewhere, go to the gym, adopt, be a foster parent.
Exactly.
I mean, do something that has a little bit of worth besides that.
If I was Jay, I'd be thinking, you're a loser. Yeah. 20 years later, you're finding a legal loophole to try and get this out to the... I'm like, come on, it's 20 years. Find something else to do.
Yeah.
Adopt a dog, I don't know.
I know.
Like you said, do something. Just... Yeah. Poor J-Lo. I sort of feel for her in this one.
Yeah, I mean, she's set brand-wise, but it still kind of sucks when you're a mother, too. And you know you have this kind of thing that's out there, and it's looming, and you've got this first husband. Now, the tape, the original tape, is under, like, it's locked up at a courthouse somewhere. No one can get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But he claims, and he's bragging and showboating, that he's got copies. So it's not really dead. So it exists.
It's going to linger.
Yeah.
Lingering's the worst. Knowing something's lingering over your head all the time. It's just almost, in the back of your mind.
It's almost worse than just having it come out, comment on it real quick, and then it disappears. And someone else makes the same mistake 2 minutes later.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a big deal for a week, right? Maybe even less, if it comes out.
Yeah, who knows?
People say that's hot, then they'll get over it, then they'll move on.
Especially because it's been done and been done and been done. It's nothing like, a private home video sex tape is released. I mean, we've seen them. So it's really nothing groundbreaking at this point.
I mean, and Kim Kardashian's and Paris Hilton's were graphic. They were full-on porn movies, you know?
Yeah, see, this one doesn't seem to be the same. This one seems to be more like foreplay and fooling around and sexual themes than it is like straight up like, you know, on your back.
So this ex-husband's just spending his days with his lawyers trying to get this released. Come on. Yeah,
so again, nothing else to do. Well, let's just take a total left turn and let's go to Honey Boo Boo's original estate. The home of which the show Here Comes Honey Boo Boo is being demolished. Now, I read a conflicting report that it says it's actually a nearby library, but that was from a questionable source. Major media outlets, including Page Six, yes, maybe major to some, who knows, some people live and die by that and all celebrity dirty laundry and all that, but apparently this house is going to be demolished after not being able to be sold.
I wasn't born yesterday, but I've never watched Honey Boo Boo, but I knew it was, it's, you know, it's been cut, but it was a huge, huge, huge success, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
So I opened your article and I'm like, I didn't know much about it. And then I saw this 3-bedroom dump.
Yeah.
I mean, is this where the family used to live?
Yeah, it's 1,300 square feet and they had at least 6 people living in there with pets.
I mean, it's 40.
I think it was up to 8 at one point with the baby.
How can something be on a house be on sale for $45,000 and no one be able to buy it either, no matter how much of a dump it is?
Can you imagine a house in L.A. for $45,000?
No, it's a brick.
Yeah.
It's
like a bathroom size.
I was thinking that as I was reading it. I'm like, I've been so L.A.-itized right now with all the prices, all the money. I didn't know $45,000 homes exist.
No.
And this thing's 3-bedroom. I mean, it's a dump, but it's still... It's 1,300 square feet. It's got some space.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you just buy the land or build it up? I don't know. It blows my mind. Even I can afford that.
Me too. Almost. Yeah. It's even the neighbors in my neighborhood have cars that are more than 50K.
Exactly.
It's crazy. But I mean, of course, we get this different income brackets all up. But I mean, they couldn't even find a buyer to this house. I mean, that really is a steal. I guess it needs a lot of work to be done. It didn't look very glamorous
on screen. So now it's being demolished.
Apparently so. The owner is just calling it quits and demolishing the whole thing.
It's surprising to me that, like, a big fan doesn't buy it or anything. You know how in auctions...
Yeah, there's always someone that's a little crazy.
People buy a baseball... an ice hockey player's tooth that fell out when he got hit or something. You know, there's all these random purchases. I thought someone would just... Because it was a huge hit, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, they moved out of that house in February. And they moved into an actual nice... You know, what you would think of when you think of, like, you know, family with, you know, money and a good place.
Didn't they make a huge amount of money?
Yeah, and they put a lot away. The mother did invest the money pretty smartly, and they have a decent new house, so they don't need it anymore. But, I mean, I'm, you know, kind of surprised to see it go.
The whole thing's a little strange to me. A dump $45,000 house, no one's buying it. It's getting demolished now.
Just let it sit there then. What are you going to demolish it for? What's the point?
I don't get the point either. What do they do with it
now? I mean, it's in Georgia. It's not like the land is going to be like, you know, in Manhattan where it's like we can put like a whole hotel where this house was, you know?
Yeah, maybe I should move to Georgia and I could build like an estate.
Oh, the price is down there, even in Florida. And it's just, you can do anything.
The amount I pay here for rent for a 2-bedroom apartment is astronomical. Comparison to the rest of the nation.
It's unbelievable.
You know?
You can't touch a thing here. And everything's older. And I was just in Florida, and my sister has a beautiful apartment. And you know, she's got a dishwasher, all new appliances. No one's even lived there. The whole complex, there's no sign to even say what it is. It doesn't go up on a GPS because it's so new.
No, it's amazing. My
and she pays half of what I pay. Yeah. I split up one 2-bedroom.
My friend just moved into a mansion in Iowa, like a mansion. It's like 3 stories big. It's a mansion. It'd be a $13 million home in the right area here.
Oh, wow.
He pays nothing. Mm-hmm. If I paid that, I think I'm living for free.
That's why I always say I'm cursed by wanting to work in this industry and live in this city, because I want it bad enough. I love being here. But, my God, what a life I could have if I was just smart enough to realize it.
You and me both, man. We're in the same situation there.
Yeah, sometimes like, why am I here? But no, it's all good. And you know what? You have to have those goals and those aspirations, and eventually maybe you'll get something, you know.
Yeah,
good enough, you know, nice enough.
But that's what intrigued me opening your article. I'm like, whoa, $45,000
Yeah.
No one bought it. Such a famous reality series. Just.
I'm surprised some fool didn't snatch it up. From one house in Georgia to the White House in D.C., another family is looking to make a move, and the Obamas are pretty much done with their presidential stint. Michelle was on The Late Show, and she was just saying, like, I can't wait to get to Target. Like, I can't wait to put my windows down. Like, she's like, I can't. She's like, I press the button on the power windows, and everybody's, like, you know, freaking out. So I can't do it. Those people really are living in, like, you know, a glass box.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Obama recently on, I think it might have been Jimmy Kimmel or something. And he tried to put it in some perspective. He got off Air Force One. He wanted to go for a walk, just like, up to like a store down there, and he's like, can I go? And the Secret Service guy said, that is 786 feet or something.
Oh,
like, they'd already calculated the feet of the place they were landing, and that's the sort of bubble they live in. But
wow. I love to take walks, to not have that freedom. Sometimes if you're coming down from like a bad situation or something, a walk is necessary.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you then. I need to clear my head.
Exactly. Even if it's a simple around the corner. So to not have that, I mean, and then times that by 8 years of not being able to move like that. Oof.
That's
not human.
I mean, she's got it pretty good. She's been 8 years, Air Force One, the White House. She knows some of the deepest, darkest secrets the world does not know.
Yeah.
That Air Force One is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
She flies around in that. She's had it pretty good. Now she's going to move to a nice, big estate somewhere. He's going to give speeches, make like $200,000 a presentation or something.
They'll have security for the rest of their lives.
She's pretty good.
Yeah, you don't feel too bad about her getting the deal at Target, I see.
Yeah, I mean, she can be excited and upset, but she's had it good. She's had complete opposite sides. She's had both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And she's going to experience luxury the rest of her life.
That's true.
You're not going to get much sympathy from me that you're sick of the White House and
stuff.
There are some serious perks with living at the White House.
Yeah, that's true.
Being the most powerful woman in the world, nearly. Even the president's wife probably is to the queen or something.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand it, but
yeah,
she's had it good.
Well, both their daughters, they practically grew up there, and they're now 17 and 14.
Is that how old they are now?
Yeah. So they really don't know. I'm sure if you ask them, they probably don't remember too much pre-White House.
Yeah, that must be bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Like one of them was like six.
Yeah.
Or something.
Little girls. Yeah, very little
this
girls.
This is all they've known.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they must have maybe a collection of memories of life outside, you know, but I mean, beyond that, when you're that young and, you know, your life changes so drastically, it tends to kind of replace earlier memories. I can't imagine. I'm going to be very interested to see the direction those girls take post White House and how they kind of assimilate into the real world.
Yeah. They've turned into very sort of attractive young women.
Yeah.
They're well presented women, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they've been living in the Big Brother house for 8 years, cut out from all type of, you know, technology and the people. I mean, they've obviously been living, but to be able to kind of, like, you know, not have to be the president's daughters.
Don't you ever wonder, like, how they go to school and stuff? Like, did they have Secret Service around them the whole time? During school, everything, did they get homeschooled or did they go to a school?
Apparently they go to, there's a big Washington, D.C. private school for all the elite, you know, folks in Washington, the senators and all those folks, you know, if they live there. So yeah, they're pretty good. But what I'm always curious about is what their cell phones are like. What's the privacy like on cell phones? You know, because we send text messages, we get phone calls, we have certain apps for things, you know, what's it like?
I always think about that. She's 17, she's probably wanting to date.
Yeah.
Does that stuff allow? Imagine dating the president's daughter, going on a date with him, or what's the, can she text without the Secret Service seeing it? Can she say, hi, let's go to a movie tonight? Or can I come over and watch a movie?
They must always have some. If they go to a movie theater, there's someone sitting in the back or still sitting by them. There's always somebody. I was working on The Tonight Show when Jay Leno was there and Obama came. And I was with my Uncle Joe and it was great. He's a huge Obama fan.
That
it just happened to work out.
Extremely cool.
It just happened to just work out. The day I got tickets for him to go was the day Obama was going. Because I got them so far in advance, the president hadn't, you know, solidified that date yet. And there were people in the audience, you know, just dressed. This is no real huge surprise, but, you know, plainclothes people that were there to protect him. So So they had, you know, people scattered throughout that, you know, on camera would look like anybody else. And then they had, of course, pinned all around the corner of the back of the studio and the front and the floor. There were, you could see people in their suits. But that place was chock-a-block full of people. So you can imagine the
door. How close were you to him? Did you see him backstage? What did you...
I wasn't, like, totally close. But, I mean, I guess I would say I was in the box, like, right above the entrance. So that we had, there was, like, a couple seats. And then maybe, like, 25-30 feet away was Jay and Obama. So I was up high, but it was, I mean,
is it still a
he
weird
was a good size. I mean, he wasn't a speck. I mean, I could see the American flag pin. Like, you know, it was close enough.
Is it a weird feeling being in the same room as the president, knowing what's going on around you, which you don't know now? Is it eerie or something? Or?
It was distracting because, you know, if someone, like, what if, you know, someone does something out of turn? Or some news gets broken, they need to let him know. So my eyes kind of were on a little bit of everybody because I wanted to see what people were doing and how they were getting information. And they had, for the men in suits had phones and stuff, but, you know, it wasn't like people were talking into their sleeve. It wasn't like Hollywood 101 of, like, what you think. But, I mean, it was interesting and distracting because you know that this is not a regular guest.
I'd be so curious. This is the most powerful human being on the planet. Mm-hmm. Right there.
Yeah.
Just, I'd be looking around, seeing, taking in everything. I'd also feel a little weird, too. I don't know. That's pretty cool. You've experienced that.
That was one of the cooler experiences.
I'm a little jealous. That's like 0.00001 of the world has sort of been in the same presence as him.
It was crazy. And it just happened to... The craziest thing of all was it just worked out. My uncle from Rhode Island came here, my aunt and uncle, and we just got tickets. And then they said, oh, yeah, that's Obama's episode. I said, what? How is that possible? So when we got...
I went to the Jay Leno show once. I didn't have one guest I knew on. No. I felt so shortchanged.
Yeah, that happens.
At least give me someone that I can go, wow, I saw him.
Yeah.
I didn't get anyone.
Yeah.
And it was when I was new to L.A. It was like... 6 years ago, and I was still starstruck by everything Hollywood.
Yeah, and so even that didn't do it for you.
It just didn't do it. I was really upset about it.
I got my grandmother tickets, and it was Julia Louis-Dreyfus who came on, and she said, oh, I don't care about Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So I was like, oh, I can't help you. I don't know what to tell you. So most people would like her, but she just wasn't a Seinfeld fan, I guess. She's not into it. So yeah,
she let you know about it,
similarly,
too.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, we wish them luck in their life post-White House.
If I could see him speak, I mean, he is the best speaker I've ever heard, ever. The way he speaks. I've never heard anything like it. But I'm not going to be able to do it. It's going to cost a fortune to go to.
Yeah, well, who knows? He'll be around for a while. He's a young guy still, pretty much. He's got a long time.
Early 50s? He was a young president.
Yeah, so we've got a long time to be able to afford those tickets.
Yeah, just got to hurry up a little bit.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
Let's take a break from talking about sex tapes and Honey Boo Boo.
I was enjoying that.
And let's talk about you. I want to learn a little bit more about you. Now, I haven't known you that long. We did a show on AfterBuzz, but, you know, we've been friendly ever since.
You were my first show on AfterBuzz.
Yeah.
You were it. You were the first person I knew on AfterBuzz.
Yeah.
So I owe you a thank you.
Oh, well, that's good. No problem. I was just sitting there doing Queens of Drama. And, you know, that's when we learned, of course, if we had already, by hearing your accent, that you are not from the U.S. So you didn't know a lot of the actresses on the show, so we kind of filled you in.
That was my biggest... That's what I was concerned about the most. I watched the first show you did. I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, God, this guy, Grant, he knows everything about all these actresses. Like, you're really switched on with soaps, TV... You belong in that sort of industry,
it's
man.
It's my thing. It's a curse, but at the same time, it's like my bread and butter.
I'm like, how am I going to compete with this? Maybe I'll just shut up and just sit there. I don't know.
All worked out well
But it worked well, I thought.
A real Motley Crue panel we were covering that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was your first time with AfterBuzz, a new experience for you. You know, tell me about your coming here. What brought you to not only America, but what magnetized you to L.A.?
Well, tennis brought me to America. I got a tennis scholarship when I was 18, a college tennis scholarship. And the thing is, in Australia, we don't have college sports.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to say to people, 100,000 people go to a college football match in Australia, they don't comprehend that. Because you either have professional sportsmen or you have university students. Completely mm-hmm. different. So I had a choice after I graduated high school. Do I go try and play professional, or do I give up tennis and study? So the chance to get a tennis scholarship and come study abroad, get it paid for, was just too good an opportunity to pass up. But the most interesting thing about it is my first ever experience of America was South Carolina. I went to South Carolina. And Australia is one country. Like, all the accents are the same, the culture's the same, the belief is the same.
Yeah.
America is freaking seven countries in one country. The South, the North, the Midwest, the West, everything's different. Mm-hmm. Like, you can travel from South Carolina to New York in 1 hour on a plane. Could not be more opposite places.
Yeah.
So my first ever experience was South Carolina, which is very sort of old-fashioned. The people were sort of very, very religious. They're still bitter about the Civil War. They still call the Northerners Yankees. You still feel some sort of racial segregation there, even though it just happened. So it was very old-fashioned for me. So to cut a long story short, I realized I wanted to be in LA. It's close to Australia. It's very similar to Australia. The weather's similar. The people are similar. The culture's similar. And it's Hollywood. It's the entertainment capital, you know, New York, London, the world pretty much. Mm-hmm. So that's where I wanted to be. So after graduating, I worked in tennis in North Carolina, but then I quit to go back and study in Australia again. I did some radio there. I got a postgraduate journalism degree. I studied further. And then I was thinking, now, how the hell do I get back to LA? Because it's not easy. Visas are not easy. I can't just say I want to go to America and work. You have to have a job and stuff. But I met my girlfriend, who's now my fiance, who gave me that opportunity because there's spouse visas, there's immigration things if you're dating an American or engaged to an American.
Oh, okay.
So it was perfect that I met an LA girl. So in the end, I'm like, yeah, get me there. And I've been in LA the last 3 years. And so I love it, man.
It was really meant to be for you then. By meeting her and getting
That's what I think. Other days when we're not getting along so well, I start to second guess myself on that again. But it worked out well. Now I just got to establish myself here more. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've met guys like you. I've got AfterBuzz. I do a radio show, so things are good. LA's tough. Yeah. LA's a brutal place.
We're lucky that we have what we have going on, because like there are a lot of people out there waiting and pulling tickets, you know.
Exactly.
I feel like in LA specifically, there's only like so many places and so many jobs that people can go and take. And for every, it's almost like there's like a number, like 1,000 people can be in the industry. And then people, you know, are freelance, they rotate in and out, they move away, they get laid off. And then somebody like replaces that. And there's always like 1,000 people in this business. And it's like people kind of cycle through. So when you're on the outs, it's hard.
Yeah.
And then when you're in, it's like even, you know, as little, even if you're on the periphery, like you're still there doing something because there's so many people who wish they were in the spot, even if it's unpaid or, you know, temporary.
And some people that don't know LA or the industry that well, look at the glitz and glamour. It's not like that. It's the very, very few that make it. So you got to do whatever it takes.
Yep.
You know, you got to work the waiting jobs, the waitress jobs. You got to take any part you can. You've got to be hard-minded to live in LA and be in this industry.
Because
it can suck you in and spit you out, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Hard.
A couple of times over, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you really, you know, maybe I should go get a sales job and sell insurance and just be normal. And I'm like, no. That bores me. I don't want to wake up and be 60 and have like a mortgage, a couple of cars, go on the occasional holiday, and I look back and my life's gone. I want to be a little different, and you are different in this industry in some ways.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's not business is easy to pursue, and I've said this on the show before. So why not go and just shoot for the moon, you know?
Nothing's
easy. This is going to be hard, so if this is what you want, do it.
I keep saying you can live with hurt, you can't live with regret. regret's the worst when it comes to everything. And if you don't give it a, if you give it a go and, you know, it doesn't work out, at least you don't have the regret. You can deal with hurt, you know? It's like trying to pick up the hot girl. If you give it a go and get rejected, that's okay, you move on.
Yeah.
But if you don't and then you find out a bit later you had a chance and it's too late now, that's regret. That hurts.
Yeah.
It's the same in this industry. So I think you just got to. I think you got to be tough, and you got to go for it.
Yeah, I like that.
And you know, things do happen. Maybe, hopefully.
Yeah.
Somewhere along, but that's the motto I'm going by, right, at least for now.
Growing up in Australia, what was your perception of LA, and how has that changed?
I mean, it's completely different to what you think. Like being in Australia, being so far away from Hollywood, America, LA. And watching the Hollywood movies, seeing the stars from the eras, the Humphrey Bogarts, Frank Sinatra, Steve Martin, everyone, you think Hollywood, and knowing they all work there, they all live there, you think it's glitz and glam. You think it's gold streets and palm trees and everywhere and always sunshine. It is always sunshine. But then you go there for the first time. I remember I went there for the first time and Hollywood sucks.
Yeah.
Hollywood's dirty. Like Hollywood Boulevard is.
I swore off of it a long time ago. Yeah.
There's homeless people around. It's dirty. It's not. I mean, and
it's
I try and explain that to people back home. I'm like, there's parts of LA, like Beverly Hills and where the stars live and stuff, but generally, Hollywood, it sucks.
It does.
Hollywood Boulevard's busy. It's trashy. But then you have the Dolby Theatre, whatever it's called now, where they have the Oscars and they bring out the red carpet that day and they make it look amazing because there's beautiful people everywhere. And that's the perception people outside America get, just because we don't know. We see what we watch, and what we watch is movies, red carpet events, the glitz and the glamour. And we think, man, if you live in Hollywood, that's that.
Yeah.
You're walking down, you know, beautiful golden plated streets.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not like that, though.
No,
you know, it's far from that.
Yeah.
And that's been the biggest learning curve for me in some ways.
Right.
Which I've got to tell people about, you know, because even friends, when they want to visit me, they're like, man, let's go to Hollywood. I'm like, where do you want to go in Hollywood?
No.
What do you want to do there? It's not. I've got to educate them a little bit.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Were you ever disappointed by moving out to, by just moving to the U.S.?
No. I've always wanted to. I've always been very independent. I haven't wanted to be like my friends, like live in the town where I lived. You know, marry a local girl, and again, wake up and be 60.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to do different things. Go to America, explore opportunities, and the great thing about LA is there is opportunity here. If you can get your hands on it, it's brutally tough. And it's same with America.
So true.
There's opportunity in America. Like I could go back to Australia. I could get a job a lot easier than I can here. But the job pans out. There's only so much it can take you. Because we've only got 20 million people.
All right. Yeah.
Here you have 300 million people. You're the center of the universe pretty much. The opportunity is endless. You've just got to sort of take a risk and take it. You know, and that's what I love about it in a lot of ways. But I mean, it's different. It's different than I thought. You know, Australia were far away from things.
That's true. Yeah. So I mean, you've brought yourself to the new world pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, even driving here from Orange County, the traffic, there's just annoying, the streets, there's roadworks, there's this, there's that. People don't think it's like that.
Yeah, no.
But then again, I love it.
Yeah. A friend of mine says it's like when you watch reality shows and you see, like, all the beautiful streets of New York, you see the Empire. It's like Celebrity Apprentice. You know, there's aerial shots of downtown and the beautiful buildings. The GE building is majestic. And then we do a pan over past the Statue of Liberty. But the truth of New York is that there's a lot of, you know, there's homeless, there's the pizza rat.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on that isn't seen. And that's how it is here. I mean, we can do a pan past the Hollywood sign. We can go through those, look at the Beverly Hills palm trees as they pass by and the, you know, the convertible. But that's a small part of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do we watch in Australia? Reality shows, number one show, Kardashians, glitz and glamour, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood movies, red carpets, Oscars, Grammys, Gracie, Emmy, glitz and glamour. You don't see anything else. So that's why I thought This right. is what it's like.
Yeah.
It's our perception of it.
Mm-hmm. So that you mentioned Kardashians. What are the biggest shows in Australia, TV-wise?
Similar to here. Similar, yeah.
I assume so.
I don't watch the Kardashians. I know you don't like talking about it, but it's a huge hit in Australia for the young teenage women, especially them wanting to go to America and do what they're doing. Everything's very similar. Everything in Australia is American. We watch the American movies, the American shows, and that's what we see. Yeah. And that's why we learn to love America. We also think you're nuts in a lot of ways. But, but the Hollywood aspect, the movie aspect.
Yeah, the entertainment.
The entertainment of it, we love about it. And that's why I wanted to be here.
Right.
You know, that's why I wanted to give it a go here. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
you're doing it.
It's good. I've met people like you and stuff like that doing this.
And you're here and you're doing a radio show. Tell me more about this. It's through iHeartRadio and Indie100.com, right?
Yeah, it's an online show on Indie100.com, but it's also syndicated on iHeartRadio, which is good. It means we're getting listeners.
Yes.
iHeartRadio is a big deal. It's about indie music. And I didn't know a thing about indie music when I came here, but my co-host did. I was just like the sort of fool that just spoke in between the songs and just about anything. That's my personality. And I like to ask questions to indie musicians, guests, and not know too much about indie music, so I can relate to a lot of listeners that without getting technical. But I mean, that's going well. We've built an established listener base.
How long have you been doing that?
2 years now, just once or twice a week. Right. And we've got a good listener base. We get a lot of good feedback. Hopefully it can continue to push on. I want to get you on the show in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm not a singer, but I'll come on and I'll fill the dead air.
Just chat like you are now with me. Yeah, you'll be perfect. We just got to play music every 6 or 7 minutes.
Okay.
So we chat, then we play like three or four songs.
I'll find some time to shut up in the middle of it.
While the songs are on, you can just kick back and then we're on again.
Nice, that sounds great. So how did an opportunity like that come? Now, you mentioned your co-host. Did she kind of pull you on?
No, I saw an ad for it, and it was at 9 o'clock in the morning, an audition, and it was in Burbank, and I was in Orange County, and I thought it was a scam. The only reason I went was because I was jet lagged. I just got back from Australia, ironically.
That's so weird.
I was wide awake. So I was thinking, lying in bed, thinking, I'm wide awake. Why don't I just go if it's a scam? You know, the live with hurt, can't live with regret thing again. Won't regret it.
What a great theme.
And I went and they met me. Then they called me back a few weeks later. They put me on air. And then they put me on air with another host. And they had a band in. I interviewed the band. And then they offered me a job there. It was about a month process to do a show. But, I mean, the pay's little. You've got to make your own pay. You've got to get your own advertising. You've got to... It's not like a commercial radio spot.
Right.
It's still independent. It's still internet radio, but... I mean, it's going well.
It's a very legitimate platform. You don't know who's listening. It's something you can add to your portfolio. You've been now doing it for 2 years. I mean, it's very legit.
And I mean, it's fun. I love to talk like you do too. Yeah. It's fun to get out there and just banter on any little question you see during the day. I relate topics to just anything that's happened to me during the day, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can go on air and just chat about it.
How long is the show?
It's 2 hours, but we're only probably talking for about 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is pretty much music. So we play three or four songs, 12 minutes of music, come back, chat for 6 or 7 minutes. But it's indie100.com or on your TuneIn app on your smartphone.
Oh, yeah.
Indie 100. Listen Mondays and Wednesdays at 12 p.m. or if you have iHeartRadio, Guy and a Girl Show.
There you go. So find that, so it's pretty easy to look up, not too difficult.
Yeah, and you come on it and you can talk about it. You can see everything. Come on next week or so.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. Yeah, I'll be there. Let me know.
It'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, definitely you are.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I want to get on there and we'll see. Let's keep the conversation going. Now, of course, we mentioned AfterBuzz a few times now. Now, I saw some videos. You were on the set of Shark Tank.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I want to hear all about that. Now, everybody loves Shark Tank. All ages, my whole family watches. I love it. I'm glad that it's back on TV. I'm so glad a lot of stuff has finally returned. But I want to know, I saw the interview, and you can find it on AfterBuzz TV's YouTube channel, but you spoke of my favorite, Barbara. I love Barbara Cochran.
She is such a cool lady. Yeah. Have you seen some of my photos with her? She's like hugging me and stuff like that.
I didn't see those yet.
I'll put it up, but she is the most, she's very strange. She's got a chip on her shoulder.
Okay.
She's got a big chip on her shoulder. She got rejected from Shark Tank originally because Laurie got the part over her, and mm-hmm. she doesn't like Laurie. She says it's because of her breasts and her long blonde hair.
Oh, so it's a legit.
She doesn't like her. If we were watching the episode, like, she wasn't on the first taping, the first pitch. So mm-hmm. she was backstage, back behind the scenes, watching it with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just chirping about Laurie. She was just going on and on and on. Like, she even made all the press go, put your hand up if you think she's more attractive than me. And then she's like, you better not put your hand up. So she's got a legitimate chip on her shoulder. And she keeps going in like, I've been told my whole life I can't do this. And do you know what? I'm a millionaire now. But she
definitely had a chip on her shoulder.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun, and she can talk. You didn't even see that photo. Just
I'll tweet this out and I'll retweet your tweet. How about that? On Grant's Rants. My Twitter account, Grant's_Rants, and you can see Guy getting pretty close with Barbara Cochran on the set.
She put me in that position.
Oh really?
But
she seems like a blast.
She's so much fun. But it was weird, your perception. I always thought Robert was the nicest one, like the friendliest one.
Yeah, it seems that way.
He was the most standoffish I spoke to. He was the sort of like not as nice one in some ways. I always thought Mr. Wonderful, I was very nervous interviewing him, but he was fantastic, very serious as ever, but respected your questions, asked them, answered them, just like he is in the show, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Cuban was just the most impressive guy I've come across. Just to give you an example, he knew everyone's name. There was a whole lot of press there. The first thing he says to you is, hey, what's your name? You say mm-hmm. Guy. Next thing, he speaks to you for 2 minutes. He goes around, speaks to every other press, and then he did a taping of this. In between each pitch, there's a smorgasbord of food, like mm-hmm. back in the studio. They take a break in between each pitch and they have food. And I was next to Mark getting some food because we were all watching. And he's like, hey, guy, can you just grab me a soda? Yeah. Like, 2 hours later, millions of press, he remembered my name. And then takes like 5 minutes to speak to the Sony Studios janitor, the cleaner.
Wow, I mean, that's really rare. Like, that doesn't happen. People don't acknowledge even, like, really anybody at the network when they're on that level.
No, he impressed me so much. And he hadn't been back there for 6 months, and he knew everyone's name. He took time to speak to everyone, and he just oozed charisma, just walking around the place. It was so funny. At the start, I was completely starstruck. I'm like, there's Laurie. There's Damon. Then by the end of it, they interact with you. You're just like, they're just like another person.
Yeah. But I love that.
It was such a fun day. But the thing that's... there was stuff I didn't know. Like, each pitch, we watched each pitch. They do like 8 in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Each pitch was about an hour and a half.
I was going to ask. How long are they really? An hour and a half easily.
They cut it down to 10 minutes on the show when you watch it.
Wow.
These things are an hour and a half to 2 hours. They are asking question after question after question. And then I always used to wonder when I was watching on TV, why these guys are sweating so much. I mean, I know they're nervous,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, they're really sweating. It's because they've been up there for 2 hours. They've had everything thrown at them for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So they've got to stand up to it. And when they make a deal, like, I'll give you 200 grand for 30%, it's not that simple. They cut a lot out. It's like, I want 200 grand for 30%, but I want this. I want a buyout if you go bankrupt. I want this. I want... they that name like 9 things, Nine, and you don't hear all that. It's a very serious negotiation.
There's more to it, yeah.
And it's funny. There's a pause when the entrepreneur comes out. They have to wait for like 3 minutes looking at the sharks while everyone gets ready, while the cameras get ready. And that's the most awkward time. The sharks are just staring at them, and the 3 minutes must seem like an eternity for them. Some are pacing, going up and down. You can see them going over the numbers in their heads. Some are just looking at the ground. Some are sort of trying to awkwardly smile at the shark. And the sharks are just eyeing them out, you know, trying to get a first impression of them.
Yeah.
So I learned so much from it. Just, and now I watch the show, I'm like, oh yeah, they didn't say that. I watched that, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. So you got on the set through After Buzz. How did that work out?
It was amazing. I do the show, the Shark Tank After Buzz show, and they called me up and said, can you be at Sony Studios at 9 a.m? Grabbed the equipment. I went with one other girl. I didn't know what to expect. There wasn't that many press there, so sort of personal. We got to speak to every one of them at first. That's all were there.
Amazing.
And then they were all switching pitches. Like Damon wasn't in the first one. Barbara wasn't in the first one. So when they weren't in it, they'd come watch it with us. We'd watch it on a TV backstage.
Right.
And they'd watch and they'd be like, I don't like him at all. I'd make a deal with him. Yeah, he seems all right. They'd be commentating with us as they watch it.
Yeah.
It was really cool. But I was surprised how legitimate it actually is. I mean, it's real reality. These are real pitches. These are real negotiations.
Yeah.
The only thing different is they cut it down from an hour and a half to 10 minutes.
Wow.
But this is real stuff.
What was the set like?
It was a big studio, big, you know, tin studio. And and it was exactly like you saw it on TV, except like, you know, they walk out through the door with the sharks on each side.
Yeah.
Backstage is just a big tent in the studio. It's just a tent. They must all go and prepare there. And then you walk out. You know, they make it look like like a nice office area. Oh, it's just a big studio with a big tent in there. And then they put the floorboard up.
Are those real fish and sharks in there?
I don't know. I didn't get to go in there. Good question.
I was always curious because, you know, it's possible.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot.
So we're on the outside of there. We're watching. And there's a long corridor and the tent back. They start in the tent. They go up the long corridor. Then they go out into the studio.
Wow.
I managed to sneak a few. Probably shouldn't have done it like that. Being the new shark, I got to sit.
So in this shot, guy's sitting right in the chair. I believe Mark Cuban's chair.
It was Mark Cuban's chair then, pretending to be the new shark.
I like it. That should be like your Facebook or Twitter picture. It's pretty legit.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and that show's booming right now.
Yeah.
Everyone watches it.
And everyone's trying to rip it off, too.
Really?
On cable channels, and there's a version of it on CNBC. A lot of people are, and CNBC, of course, has the syndication rights to it, but everyone's trying to find that model of an investor show, whether it's investor in food or with individual niche industries. But that's the original, and that one is just, it's so tight and so well produced. That show's got legs for a long time.
I remember I interviewed Mark, and I said to him, what did you think? And he said the first three seasons weren't doing well at all. But he said Mark Burnett, the producer, said to us, you have to stay with it. I know when something's going to be a success, this is normal. So they all wanted to go out after the first three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then about season four, he was right. It completely exploded.
And it's so smart that they put that on a Friday night. I think that's perfect programming for a Friday night on a network. Because, you know, Fridays aren't what they used to be. But that's it just works.
Yeah.
It works. And it clearly works for them. And it's a very successful show all around. Real, real interesting to hear what it's like on that set. What a cool experience you've had.
It was awesome. I had a great day.
Yeah.
I was there the whole day. Like 8 to 5. Went to all the pitches. And you know,
I love stuff like that because that to me is the real making of television right there. I love anything in the studio like that.
Yeah, I saw it all. And I'm always skeptical of reality TV in a lot of ways.
Oh,
but
yeah.
This was real.
Mm-hmm.
This was really real.
Well, see, and then look at what a success it is. The real, perhaps the realer the show, the more, because people can see through that. People want something that, you know, resembling authenticity.
These were real negotiations. It really happened. They were just an hour and a half, not 10 minutes.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I love this inside perspective. I love hearing about kind of what keeps you motivated and keeps you moving out here.
I love being on the show.
Yeah,
well, you're a great host. You're doing well.
Thank you.
Keep this up, man.
The show is doing very well. I want to thank all of my listeners and those that have subscribed and downloaded the show. Personally, I want to thank you. And I want to ask that you please go on iTunes, give me some commentary and 5 stars, please. That will help bring more people to Grant's Rants and let the ranting continue. Guy, thank you for coming in.
Well said. Thank you.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson. Granted Wish Productions 2015.